paranoia seems to be largely what drives the Kim dynasty. But I think it's fair to say as well that, you know, we in the West and also in China and outside of North Korea are a little bit paranoid about them as well, just because we don't really know what quite drives and motivates them.
What are some of the myths we're holding about North Korea at the current time?
Well, I think the biggest myth, or at least the most dangerous myth that I wanted to deal with in my book, as someone who's sort of, you know, visited North Korea on a number of occasions, which is not necessarily an easy thing to do, particularly for Americans, of course, is to try and show the ordinary North Korean people and the daily life that they have as difficult and highly politicized and highly regimented and with a lot of surveillance, but that they are essentially normal people. I think a lot of the concerns that we have about the North Koreans are that we almost see them as like this robotic nation. The few images we get are always of military parades or something like that. But these are people who get up in the morning and kiss their kids goodbye and go off to work, and the kids go off to school and so on. You know, I mean, there were 22 million people trying to live a fairly normal life there in the circumstances, despite the sort of rather strange lifestyle of the leadership and the elite.
North Korea is opening up a little bit in terms of tourism as it seeks more hard currency. What do tourists see as normal when they visit Pyongyang and other locations within North Korea?
Well, it's a little bit, someone once called it Disneyland East. It's a little bit like, it is a little bit like going to Disneyland in a sense, in that, you know, you see exactly what the corporation that runs North Korea wants you to see and nothing else. And anyone who tries to sort of look behind the stage sets or to actually talk to the ordinary people, if you like, someone will try and stop you doing that. So they very much want to handle you. They want to guide you around. They don't want you to have ordinary conversations with people. So in that sense, there is an odd sort of feeling that you're in one big sort of theme park when you're there.
What prevents the regime in North Korea from reforming while retaining power when it can clearly look next door at China and see a 35-year blueprint for progress?
Well, this is becoming more and more of an issue, I think, now, as more and more North Koreans, not just the elite, start to see just how wide the disparity has become between North and South Korea. This is way beyond anything we ever saw in the example that's always used, East and West Germany. The disparity, of course, between Seoul and Pyongyang is almost unimaginable. They're essentially now two completely different nations. But again, you know, what their response to it has not been to emulate what has gone on in the South or even to emulate what has gone on in China, which is a good example for them. A lot of market reforms, a lot of more money moving around the system, but the authoritarian party staying in place, regime survival. But they don't seem to be able to do that. Their response has been to try and lock down and stop people knowing what's going on outside.
It brings us to the prospect for change or collapse and reunification. There's such a wide disparity between the North and the South. Would that make reunification even remotely possible?
Well, I think that everybody still, North and South, still talks about reunification and, you know, of course, the reunifying again of the of one Korea. But I think now when you hear South Korea talk about it, and also when you hear countries with a very direct border relationship with Korea, like China, obviously, talk about it, what they really mean by reunification is that it's sort of a politically correct way of saying, what do we do if there is a complete and utter economic collapse or a coup within North Korea that we don't really expect? Everyone used to talk about it in an East and West Germany sort of way, that the South would have to take on the reunification of the country as the stronger economy, but no one's even sure that anyone would want to do that now. The current thinking, I think, really, that's coming out of Seoul and certainly out of Beijing in terms of this, is that if there was any sudden collapse, economic collapse, or sudden regime change, a coup, that the borders would have to be locked down, the DMZ would have to remain in place, there would have to be some sort of effort to bring North Korea up to a certain level before you could actually reopen the border there at the DMZ and have people move backwards and forwards, because the divergence, the discrepancy between North and South now is so vast.
Diplomatically and economically, amid tough United Nations sanctions in place, what is the best strategy for engaging North Korea at this point?
When it comes to North Korea, we have a problem. What we have to do is just keep this drip feed of aid, and that's the dirty little secret, that none of us want a complete collapse in North Korea. South Korea is a strong economy. It is a modern economy now. It is a consumer economy, but it is still reasonably fragile. Young people in South Korea want to have all the consumer goodies that all the rest of us have, and they enjoy that. They don't want to have to pay, you know, 90% tax to support the reunification of Korea. Japan remains in a long-term recession. China wants to spend any money it has on continuing to build China and continuing to promote stability in China so that they, the Communist Party there, stays in power. I don't think the American taxpayer wants the bill for North Korean reunification. Europe doesn't want the bill for that. It would be multiples and multiples of what the bill was for German reunification. And I think that the dirty little secret that we have to accept is that we are going to have to keep this drip feed of aid going into the country, however much we do not like the leadership of that country, that stops another famine happens, that stops starvation happening. And that is unfortunately not great news for the 22 million ordinary people of North Korea. But at the moment in the world situation, it's about all we can do. And I think it is what everyone really thinks about doing. And I think we should talk openly and honestly about that.